for taking a ride on the Freedom Train. Your community resource podcast series every third and fourth Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. I'm your conductor, Joseph Ward, and today I'm riding solo, but we still riding smooth and we still riding good. Shout out to Patrick Irvin and Fitz Francis. Remember, spread the word, spread the word, spread the word. Join us at 712-775-7031. The access code is 619-364-257. And make sure you visit our website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. And also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at _FreedomTrain. And remember, if you're not following us, you're not really following nothing good. You ain't got to believe it, but hey, that's what it is. At the bottom of education, at the bottom of politics, even at the bottom of religion, there must be, for our race, economic independence. And that there's a quote by Booker T. Washington. Remember, the Freedom Train, radio designed to free your mind. And like I said, today I'm riding solo. My man Pat couldn't make it, but it's all good. You know, he's going to be here next week. And we have a good show for you next week because we are actually interviewing author Akua Egusi. So, you know, make sure you be back next week, and I'm going to hold it down by myself today. I get to flex my little muscles and do my little chair dances and all these things here. You know what I'm saying? So, let's keep the show rolling and moving forward. You know how we do. And it is now time for our Own the Shoulders of Giants segment. And today we are profiling the Candaces of Kush. Sit back, relax, and let this thing bang you in your brain. Candaces of Kush. When we study history and great people who contributed to our world, our women warriors and rulers are often overlooked. From the 3rd century BCE to the 2nd century CE, the Empire of Kush is ruled by a line of independent female rulers called the Candaces, or in their traditional language of Kush, Kentucky. Amenirad, Amenishekete, Nawidma, and Malekwebar were 4 queens well known as Candaces. Different from their Egyptian counterparts, the Candaces had absolute rule instead of the power coming from their husbands. During the period known as the Meroitic period, Kush thrived and it was often thought of as a nation never ruled by a male. The word Kentucky means queen mother, so the title was not taken lightly. If a woman was a Candace, she was able to influence the line of succession and consolidate her power. The Candace often played a role in the coronation of the new king. The Candaces are well known for refusing Alexander's entry into Kush and deterring him on one of his military campaigns, causing him to overtake a weaker Egypt. The strength of the Candace rulers also appeared in history as they were able to thwart the Roman conquest of Kush. Using brilliant battle tactics, Amenirad attacked Petronius during Rome's punitive invasions of Naupacto. They waited until most of his troops were gone off to battle. Then the Amenirad attacked the army. When Petronius returned, he found his mighty army in a standoff with a nation they considered weaker. The standoff lasted until Augustus Caesar and the Amenirad were able to settle on signing a peace treaty. Over a period of 1,250 years, the kingdom of Kush was amazing and certainly one of the greatest, if not the greatest, civilization of all its time. The title of Candace lasted for 500 years, allowing Kush to become the great civilization it was under female rule. The Candaces set a standard for excellence and stability. A female-dominated society with a female warrior class is not talked about much in the pages of history, especially a purely African civilization. The Candaces were brave, brilliant, and influential. They were an example of how a strong spirit would not be held back by sexism and male domination. Women, no matter their race or creed, can learn a lot from the Candaces, women who successfully ruled the kingdom and inspired Egyptian culture and prestige. To all of the Candaces and all of the female rulers of Kush, thank you for your brilliance and courage, which helped create greatness in the form of a kingdom. These women are an example of greatness of the female spirit. To all of the Candaces, we proudly stand on your shoulders. To learn more about On the Shoulders of Giants, visit www.ontheshoulders1.com. Uh-uh-uh. princes of Cush. Remember, if you want more information about historical figures sung and unsung throughout the African diaspora, visit www.ontheshoulders1.com. That is ontheshoulders1.com. I have over 97 profiles of African heroes throughout the world. And also, my book is available, On the Shoulders of Giants, Volume 1, North America. It's available at Amazon and paperback. You can go to Kindle and get the Kindle version. You can go over to audible.com and get the audio book. You can go to ejunkie.com and get the PDF. And while you're at ejunkie, you can get the interactive PDF workbook that accompanies the book. You can go to lulu.com to get the print book in bulk orders. Anything you need, we got. You don't like to read, we got the audio book. You don't like the Kindle, we got regular books. You don't like regular books, we got the Kindle and the audio book. And whatever you need, we got the PDF. And you want your kids to learn more about African history, we have the interactive PDF workbook. And you have my website. A lot of information for you. All right. So, now we're going to move into our social discussion. And today, I want to discuss the impact that HIV/AIDS has on the black community and, you know, things that we can do as a community to help combat that as a health issue. Also, I want to, you know, for those who don't know what HIV/AIDS is, who don't really know what it is, I'm going to kind of break it down for you a little bit. Just give you a little more insight information on HIV/AIDS. And I'm going to go over some stats about how HIV/AIDS is affecting the black community. Now, since 1981, HIV/AIDS has been a topic in America. You know, HIV/AIDS was first discovered in America in white gay male populations, specifically in San Francisco and Manhattan, New York, right? So it went from there to, you know, black people, Africans, and black people in America having the highest numbers of cases of HIV/AIDS, having the highest numbers of new cases of HIV/AIDS. And what the hell is going on in our community for our numbers to be so high? There are many, many, many different ideas, many theories, many different ways you can take this. I'm not saying nobody's right or wrong. I would just like for all the information to get put on the table, and we can shift through this. We can sift through the information and see what we can use that can help us. I mean, we got to see what can help us, because, you know, we're dying off in mass from HIV/AIDS. There are too many black people who are infected with HIV/AIDS in America and in the world. But specifically, let's focus on America. You know, highest numbers of cases of HIV/AIDS are in America, you know, percentage-wise. You know, so what is HIV? You know, a lot of people think they know what HIV is. We got all different type of colorful names and all these things. Is there a difference between HIV and AIDS? You know, I often hear people referring to both as if they're synonymous. You know, HIV and AIDS, you could just interchange those words, and that's not the case. You know, we have to remember that AIDS is the progression of HIV. You have to have HIV to have AIDS. AIDS is the progression of HIV. Matter of fact, let's break down the words. Human immunodeficiency virus. And then we have acquired immunodeficiency syndrome, right? Human immunodeficiency virus is a virus that attacks the white blood cells, your T cells, your cells that are designed to fight off infection in the body. HIV attacks those cells, and it also compromises your immune system, right? Now, AIDS is the progression of that. Now, how do you get from HIV to AIDS? A good question. All right. So, the CDC has definitions for AIDS, right? So one definition is if you are HIV positive by a clinical test and you have what's called an opportunistic infection or co-infection, Right? Now, an opportunistic infection is any dormant infection that lies in your body that when your immune system is low and it can't fight off the infection and keep it dormant, that infection takes the opportunity to run rampant in your body. So that's why they call it an opportunistic infection, because that infection takes the opportunity to run rampant in your body because your T cell count is so low that it cannot fight off these dormant infections, right? So that's the first definition. If you are HIV positive by a lab test and you have the presence of one or more opportunistic infection in your body, that's the first definition of AIDS. And I'm going to say it again. The first definition is you are positive, you're HIV positive by, and you, it's a confirmed positive by a lab test, and you have the presence of one or more opportunistic infection. All right. The second definition is your T cell count is below 200 per microliters of blood. 200 microliters per blood, right? If you're below that 200 line, you know, you have less than those 200 T cells per microliter of blood, you will be considered AIDS. You know, I've heard cases of people walking around with 7 and 4 T cells, you know. And the question is, how are these people still alive? But they are alive, by the grace of God, I guess. But if your T cell count is below 200 per microliters of blood, then you, that, well, that's the second definition of what AIDS is. AIDS is not something you can catch. AIDS isn't a virus. HIV is the virus. It's the virus that compromises your immune system. So how does HIV compromise your immune system? Another good question. All right. So a lot of times when we think about HIV, because it's a big word, a human immunodeficiency virus, we often think that, you know, it's some kind of real complicated scheme that gets people infected, but it's not that. HIV, it attacks the white blood cells in your body, your T cells that are designed to fight off infections. HIV attacks those cells. Now, you have two sets of white T cells. You have different types. You have your general. In this case, you have your general cell. And the general cell, its job is to give orders to your soldiers, just like in the army. You know, so the general cell gives orders to the soldiers. The general cells tell the soldier cells to go fight off the infections in the body. So, HIV is a sophisticated virus. HIV, the first cell it attacks is that white T cell, that general cell in your body. That's the first cell it's going to attack. Now, HIV attacking that cell, it hinders the process of that cell communicating to the other cells to fight off infection. So it's just like a team whose football coach, a football team whose coach has just been taken out and nobody's giving orders. Whoever's job it is to give orders, that person has just been taken out. Nobody's giving orders, right? So HIV is first going to attack that general cell. So now the general cell is not giving orders. So since the general cell isn't giving orders, the other cells don't know what to do. The HIV also attacks those cells, the soldier cells, the T cells that are the soldier cells. And HIV attacks those cells. Now, when we say HIV attacks those cells, it's a process. And here it is. HIV will attach itself to the white blood cell. It will burrow itself into the white blood cell. And then once it's inside of that white blood cell, it would change the genetic configuration of that cell before it buds out and go to the next cell. So it's like a hit it and quit it process, right? So HIV will find a white blood cell, and it will burrow itself inside the white blood cell. And it's going to use, the process is called reverse transcriptase. And so reverse transcriptase is when HIV is taking infected RNA, the ribonucleic acid. It's taking infected ribonucleic acid, which is responsible for cell replication, right? We're talking about retroviruses, and retroviruses, they have to replicate themselves. They survive off of cell replication, right? So, reverse transcriptase, the HIV buzz inside the cell, gets inside the white blood cell, uses the process of reverse transcriptase to change the genetic configuration of that cell, and it has now created infected DNA. So that white blood cell now is an HIV infected cell. And if you have, and that goes to your what's called your viral load, and if your viral load is higher, you have more traces of the HIV virus in your body than you do white blood cells. That's what, you know, what I was talking about earlier, when your T cell count is below 200 microliters of blood. When we say T cell count, we're talking about your white blood cells. Your T cell count, your white blood cells. When that is low and your HIV viral load is high, you know, that in itself could lead to you being classified as AIDS, and AIDS itself is a classification. It's a, you have to meet the qualifications to be considered HIV, I mean, to be considered someone who has AIDS. You have to meet those qualifications, and if you don't meet those certain qualifications, you will only be classified as HIV. Now, there's something called being undetectable. There was a video out of this young lady who was going around saying that she is undetectable. She doesn't have HIV. She has HIV, but she is at the undetectable state. And since she's at the undetectable state, she cannot transmit the HIV virus, which actually in itself, it's not a true statement. And I'm doing what I can to try to get the audio for you. But the undetectable state is basically when somebody is HIV positive, but they are healthy enough that the virus is not, or the virus won't be detected through the HIV test. But the person still has HIV. The HIV is undetectable in the blood, so the chances of HIV being transmitted through that person's blood is slim to none. But HIV still can be, but it's slim to none, because the chance of it being transmitted through the blood, specifically the blood, has been greatly reduced. You know, so it's a bit, it's, but the HIV viral load has not been reduced in other bodily fluids. Semen, pre and post ejaculate, breast milk, vaginal fluids. It has not been reduced in those fluids. So, yes, you are at an undetectable level, and HIV will not necessarily be detected in your blood because you are healthy. But you still have HIV, and you can still transmit HIV to other people through your other body fluids. And these are things that are not being said. The young lady in the video, she seemed like she was trying to prove a point. And I'm saying this to say, you know, make sure you do your research yourself on these things. Don't just go off of, you know, the little videos and all these things that are going on. And I don't know. I don't know. If you're not out there doing your own research and you're just going off of anything that's out there that's been said, it's going to be an issue, because you could actually hurt yourself, get yourself hurt, and you will add to the number of black people who are HIV positive. Now Magic Johnson is an example of someone who is undetectable. Magic is not necessarily the best example to use for a person who's undetectable because of the way people see him.
not because of anything that he's personally done, but it's just the way people see him. People see Magic Johnson as this ultra-rich person, and because he's so rich, he can't have HIV. I mean, he has the money to cure HIV, but there are everyday people who are walking around who, you know, whose bank account is the same as mine and yours, who are HIV positive and at an undetectable level, who are healthy. I've even met people who don't have to take medicines, whose income is no greater nor less than mine or yours, you know. So we have to do our due diligence in going after this information. So that's one of the things I really, really, really want people to get and understand when we're talking about this undetectable thing. Don't just go around thinking that you know everything. Don't just listen to everybody. You know, I'm not saying I have all the information, but I do know I've done my research. And because I've done my research, I can talk about it, but it's not like I am the end all be all of this information. But you know what I'm saying? You got to do your due diligence, man. You got to research, you got to read, you got to know these things. If you don't know these things, then you're going to have issues, man. And like I said, HIV is already affecting the black community like it is. And if we don't want to be, if we don't want our numbers to continue like they are, then we have to do something different. You know? I mean, we got to do something different. If we don't do nothing different, then we're going to continue to be where we are and do what we do. So, I don't know. But let me continue. So, because this it's just an undetectable thing. It really just gets to me. And see, really, that's why I am adamant about it, because we come across so many people who think they know it all when it comes to talking about HIV. We got so many people, like, I'm tired of hearing men say, well, if my girl straight, I'm straight, and you black, and you're going to add to the number of people who have HIV, and you saying, well, if my girl straight, I'm straight, or a girl saying, if my man don't have none, I don't have none. Come on, man, you're a grown-ass person. You a grown-ass person, and you walk around here with that childish-ass attitude about sex and about keeping yourself safe. It's nobody's job or duty to keep you safe, but you, at the end of the day, it's on you. What are you going to do to keep yourself healthy? There are too many people out in this world who don't give a damn about you. And there ain't no other way around that. People don't give a shit about you. There are people who will intentionally infect you because either they were too afraid to say something because of some personal reason, or they just out for personal gain, or they out for revenge. You know, I don't know another way to say it. You know, we got to do something different. We have to. I don't know. We got to do something different, man. We got to take a different look at HIV/AIDS. And I'm trying not to get off track, but it's just like I'm saying, because it's so many people. Well, if she look good, she don't have anything. Or you know, hey, well, they told me they were straight. Did you see their results? Nah, I ain't see their results. Did you go get tested together? No, people not going to get tested together. I'm telling you what HIV is. I'm telling you what AIDS is. Now, HIV affects black people at the highest rates. You know, the four most common fluids that infect people with HIV is vaginal fluid, is the male ejaculate, pre and post ejaculate, it's blood and it's breast milk. Those are the four main fluids. But you also have brain fluid, you have joint fluid, you have heart fluid, you have spinal fluid, you have amniotic fluid, you have lung fluid. You know, those other fluids that can infect you, or fluids that are, you know, used in the transmission of HIV/AIDS, but they're not the main fluids that you will come across. But you got to remember, though, for something like semen or vaginal fluids to actually infect you with HIV, to be the catalyst to infection, you have to be very intimate with someone. You got to be getting very, very, very intimate with someone for those fluids to be one of the reasons why infection happens, especially, like I say, semen or vaginal fluid or something like that. Now, blood, through needle sticks, you know, sharing needles, sharing any equipment that could, that's used for shaving, you know, piercings, anything like that, that had blood on them, you know, dried blood products. Outside of the body, HIV can die on its own within 2 to 3 hours, because HIV is nothing outside the body to help the cell replication continue. So that's why HIV is going to die outside of the body, because it's a retrovirus and it's looking to replicate itself. So how can it replicate itself on the concrete or on the table? It can't, so it's going to die. But inside the body, your body is the host. Your body is the host that HIV will use to replicate itself. HIV has no face. HIV has no face. Black people in America, HIV has no face. Don't be the person who thinks you know everything about HIV, and then next thing you know, you're infected. Because you didn't want to listen, you didn't want to research, you didn't want to learn. You think because you have sex and you've been having sex for such a long time and you're good at it, that you don't need to learn anything. Then it's always something to learn about keeping yourself safe. It's always something to learn about keeping yourself safe. Your health is very important. Our collective health as a people is very important. And right now we're taking that shit for granted. Dead serious. We're thinking that an orgasm is more important than our goddamn health. Come on, people. Now, I get it. We all like to have unprotected sex. And I get why people have unprotected sex, because that shit feel good. But it's not worth my goddamn life. It's not. It's really not worth my damn life. And it shouldn't be worth yours either. We have to start having that sense of that collective health and how important it is. We're under attack by so many other means. We cannot continue to be putting ourselves in these predicaments. Now, there, like I said earlier, there are many, many, many different theories out there of why HIV exists and why it affects black people and how it affects black people. And all I'm going to say is do your research. Because I don't like to be the person who try to tell somebody what is and what isn't, or try to give you all the answers. Nah, man, I want you to go research for yourself. Then you come back and tell me what you think from your research. Do I think HIV is natural? Hell no. From all of my research of HIV, just the way it behaves and the things it does, it doesn't seem like a natural virus to me. I've researched things that say retroviruses themselves have existed for millions of years. Okay, and that could be true, but that doesn't mean anything for HIV. And why the hell does it have a patent number? You know, what the hell kind of natural disease have a patent? You know, with Robert Gallo and these guys, you know, why the hell does it have a patent? You know, why are there documents? I found documents that are saying that it was created by the government. Now, I don't know how to verify that, and I'm not going to say it's true, and I'm not going to say it's false. I wouldn't put anything past our government. We already have, you know, plenty of examples of our government using biological warfare on us. You know, the Tuskegee experiment is enough for me to know that our government can't be trusted when it comes to these diseases and biological warfare. You know, so we got to always be thinking about these things. But when it comes to our health, though, we got to think about things that we can do to help save ourselves. Let's know what HIV is. Let's know what AIDS is. Let's see how is it affecting us. Why is it affecting us? You know, why do black people in America have the highest rates of HIV in America? Why are HIV rates higher than anybody else's? These are questions we need to ask ourselves. Hold on, let's look at some stats. So, you know, one of the places, I'm not saying it's the best, but, you know, the CDC has stats. You know, CDC keep these stats on HIV, AIDS, and all these things here. So, it is saying HIV, AIDS diagnosis, and, you know, the stats not really, they're always like 2 years behind. So, in 2014, 44%. Exactly 19,540 of estimated new HIV diagnoses in the United States were among African Americans, who comprised 12% of the U.S. population. Think about that. 44% of estimated new HIV diagnoses in the United States were among African Americans. All right. Among all African Americans diagnosed with HIV in 2014, an estimated 73%, which totaled to 14,305, were men, and 26%, which is 5,128, were women. So, 73% of men are, you know, the ones who got tested were positive, black men. 26% of the positives were women. So we got a enormous amount of women and men positive, but a hell of a enormous amount of men that are positive. Now, among all African Americans diagnosed with HIV in 2014, an estimated 57%, or 11,201, were gay or bisexual men. Of those gay and bisexual men, 39%, or 4,321, were young men aged 13 to 24. So out of the 57% of gay or bisexual men that are positive, 39% were between the ages of 13 and 24. Let that sink into your brain. To all you folk out there talking about we don't need to talk about sex with our kids, let me read this for you one more time. Among all African Americans diagnosed with HIV in 2014, an estimated 57%, which totaled to 11,201, were gay or bisexual men. And of those gay and bisexual men, 39%, 4,321, were young men aged 13 to 24. Y'all better quit y'all mess, and you better talk to these damn kids about sex. Better talk to these kids about HIV AIDS. Talk to these kids about keeping yourself safe. If not, you tripping like a mug. You tripping. You are tripping. So, I mean, I'm reading to you now. All right, from 2005 to 2014, the number of new HIV diagnoses among African American women fell 42%. Though it is still high compared to women of other races and ethnicities. In 2014, an estimated 1,350 Hispanic and Latino and 1,483 white women were diagnosed with HIV compared to 5,128 African American men. Now, a good thing for African-American women, like I said, and I've read this before, that the number of newly diagnosed HIV-AIDS cases for African-American women has fallen 42%. Now, that is amazing. That is amazing. I mean, that is great. So, what are our women doing? And what are our men doing? You know, what kind of sexual practices and things? And you know, one time for our women, I ain't off that. We give our women a round of applause. African American women, give you a round of applause. African American women. HIV AIDS rates fall in 42% for newly diagnosed cases. That's amazing. Now, from 2005 to 2014, the number of new HIV diagnoses among African American gay and bisexual men increased 22%. But that number stabilized in recent years, increasing less than 1% since 2010. That's not good. All right, so we got to do something different. I know this is what folk don't like to talk about, though, when it comes to sexuality and sexual orientations and things like this. But shit, to me, hell, they still black people. And if you black, we need as many goddamn soldiers on the line as we can get. So I don't give a shit about your sexual orientation, man. Do you love being black? Are you black first? If you black first, man, let's ride. But we got to keep our people healthy and safe and vibrant, because we need them as healthy as we can have them. Fight off this crazy-ass system that we got, right? So from 2005 to 2014, in 2014, an estimated 48% or 10,045 of those diagnosed with AIDS in the United States were African Americans. By the end of 2014, 42%. Now check this out: 504,354. Those were African Americans. So that 42% were African Americans, right? In 2014, diagnosed with AIDS. We got to do something different. Living with HIV AIDS. All right. So at the end of 2012, an estimated 496,500 African Americans were living with HIV, representing 41% of African Americans living with the virus. So, of African Americans living with HIV, around 14% don't know they're infected. So African Americans living with HIV at the end of 2012 represented 41% of all African Americans living with the virus. So 14% don't know they're positive, right? So you got 14% of African Americans walking around who don't know they're positive. Folk got to get tested. Getting tested isn't hard. It's not scary. It's not a long, drawn-out process. You know, the technology has changed. The medicines and things have changed. If you are positive, there are things that you can do to keep yourself healthy, to keep yourself alive, because we don't need folk dying off. No. That love for that self-love that people keep talking about. That self-love is the love for self as a person and love for self as a group, as an organization, as a people. How much do we love ourselves? How much do we love black people, like we say? We're always talking about this black pride, but sometimes I think this black pride stuff get lost when they get to things that you personally don't agree with. Sometimes you gotta sit that shit aside. You gotta sit that shit aside sometimes so we can make sure that we are taking the proper steps to fight this system, to free ourselves from this system. But our health is being compromised. There are so many factors that go into someone being positive. There's so many factors that go into somebody being positive. Now, we know HIV isn't a death sentence, and I'm not here to condemn anybody who is positive. But what we are saying is we don't need anyone else who is positive. And if you are positive, I hope you are taking the proper steps that you need to take to make sure you are healthy, to get the care you need, the proper care, the best care for you. You don't have to get the same care that everybody else got, but what's the best care for you? And I hope you are getting it. There are programs out there for people who even don't have the income or don't have the money to pay for the medicines. Something called the AIDS Drug Assistance Program. You know, that program is designed to help people get the medicines if they choose to take the medicines. You know, if you don't choose to take medicines, what are you doing to keep yourself healthy? check this out. Estimated new HIV diagnoses in the United States for most affected subpopulations in 2014. So, First category is black MSM, and MSM stands for men who have sex with men. So, MSM is men who have sex with men. So, with that being said, those who are MSM, the number of them, like I said, HIV diagnosis is 11,201. So, with that being 11,201, that's the large number of new HIV diagnoses. So, you got black MSM, that's the leading group. So, the next group is white MSM at 9,008. Then you have Latino MSM, Hispanic Latino MSM at 7,552. Now, black women through heterosexual contact, there are 4,654 black women through heterosexual contact who are infected with HIV AIDS. Oh, when we have somebody online. Hello?
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
How you doing, Mass? Who's calling?
Yes, it's Katie. How are you, Joe?
I'm good. I'm good. How you doing?
I'm fine. I didn't get to hear too much because I was calling the wrong number. You guys had it. It was a missed dialing, so I'm after listening to catch on a little longer.
We appreciate you calling in now. Sorry about that. You know, we had the little mix up. We fixed it, though, so. But no, covering HIV/AIDS in the black community and, you know, what HIV/AIDS is, how it's affecting the community. Like right now, I was going over some stats. And what I'm going over right now is the estimated new HIV diagnosis in the United States for the most affected subpopulations, right? And so we have black MSM. You know, MSM is men who have sex with men. So black MSM, the total number is 11,201. So these are 11,201 new HIV diagnoses amongst this category of black men who have sex with men. So the next group is white MSM at 9,008. Then we have Hispanic and Latino MSM at 7,552. Now we're at black women through heterosexual contact, which is the key, at 4,654. So through black women through heterosexual contact, 4,654 new HIV diagnoses were found in 2014.
Wow.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say that's just some really deep stats.
I mean, really? It is, but you know, look at it like this. If we're finding, because they say the highest number, I read a stat earlier, the highest number of new HIV/AIDS diagnosis of, I mean, well, new people with the HIV/AIDS diagnosis, the highest group is black MSM. So black women are, it seems like if black men have higher numbers of HIV than black women, then black men may be the ones transmitting it to black women, you know, for that number to be what it is for black women.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm trying to think it's funny that, you know, you brought this up. I don't know, Joe, we must be on some mental wavelength, because one of the things I was planning to talk about on my next topic is whether or not there should be a penalty for people who know that they carry AIDS or HIV and they are continuously, like, having sexual partners, you know, without disclosing it or whatever. I'm thinking more in terms of with Charlie Sheen, who knew, and somehow, some way, now they're trying to protect this man and say, you know, that he's cured or he never really had it or, you know, things to that effect. This is a very serious, serious disease. Okay, I lost a sister to it at 22. She left behind a baby. I know people who deal with it. I know someone, the cocktails that they have to go through just to survive on a daily basis. It's ridiculous. So the stats that you're talking about, and especially in a community where the government and everyone else, we all know, is trying to either obliterate them, exterminate them, or just pretty much let them be ignored into non-existence. We have to step up. How do we fight these situations to stop the genocide and things to that effect?
Right. Well, see, now, one of the issues I learned with trying to regulate or penalize somebody who is positive that is knowingly infecting others is, how do we prove, because let's say the person is saying, in the court of law, the person is saying, well, I did tell them that I had HIV. They just don't remember. That's not my fault. Now,
okay, come on now. I'm sorry. The average person, Joe, is not, if they heard that, unless it was said under some, you know, like you're high, you're drunk,
right,
and you don't remember such conversations. But if that didn't happen, okay, the average person, everybody has sex. I don't care how well educated America is or the world is on HIV. Everybody still has a bias fear of it.
Right.
Okay. The stigma that comes with it, that there's people that no matter what the scientific and medical facts say, you know, people are thinking about their own backwards common sense way that that science is wrong and you can still get it. So people are very, 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 very funny about HIV. So there's no way in hell if this person who was infected actually told the person, they would ever forget it. So I don't think that should be something in the court of law that could be used.
Well,
but,
I agree, but I guess my thing is, because what I want people to do is don't put yourselves in a position where you have to prove it.
First and foremost, I mean, you know, we can't, how many times can you say safe sex, safe sex?
Right.
The whole point of it is, now we have, you know, you're talking about black males with males. Now, you know, right now, our young men, as it is right now, are not young men much anymore. Okay,
right.
And given that, with the fact that we have a lax regulation on media, we have an interfering government, okay, more than ever into private households. You've got governments pretty much diminishing the rights of parents to control their children's possible sexual activities. You know, no longer is it just the rebel teen that's going to go out the window despite strict parent whatever and become pregnant. But it's people saying, Mom, forget you. I'm horny. I want to have sex. The government says I can't.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So, you know, we are up against the worst of whatever. So now with greater responsibilities, or I should say with greater access to freedom, should come greater accountability. And the government should be right there as well, not just the kids doing it. But you can't give these people a loaded gun and say, go ahead, go do it. Just don't shoot nobody.
Well, okay, well, let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a parent yet, so I haven't had to go through this. So in your opinion, what is the best way to build a relationship with your child so you and your child can have these conversations about, you know, self-esteem and safe sex and HIV and AIDS and you know, in a real-life, concise way? What are things that parents can do to build those relationships?
I'm going to tell you something. I'm glad you asked me. I did an article on this, Joe, because just think about you yourself. Parents need to stop acting like their babies came from the stork in this day and age.
Right.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. I'm dealing with a little bit of active flu here, but
it's okay.
What I mean is, parents tend to think that if we try to act like an adult by pretending we were never children, that our children are going to respect us. We went through having the earrings and the spiked hair and hating our parents and jumping out windows and smoking the weed and doing whatever. All of us at some point went through something that teenagers go through now. Listen, teenagehood and all that stuff, it may be new in the sense of now there's more technology. But the puberty phase and all those rebellion things that go with teenagehood is not new. It's as old from the colonial days when dinosaurs and cavemen first came together. Okay?
Right.
So
right.
the game might have changed, but it's still the same. We all at some point did something that was something our children are doing now. And why we're so aggravated with it is because we remember doing it. So I believe that if parents are more open, I'm not pretty much saying, you know, to use the same slang, I guess. Well, then again, maybe so. If you start talking to your children the way they're going to hear it in the street, maybe the aspect of sex wouldn't be so forbidden and enticing because it's forbidden. Maybe you would let them understand that there's not something big and so great that you have to run out there and lose your life for it too soon, because sex is going to be around forever. It's
right.
going to be around until the world ends. So you're not in such a big rush to go and do something, because with the physical pleasure comes some mental and psychological situations. Forget just the babies. Forget just the possibility of contracting an STD. Girls get emotional because their bodies are sacred. Boys are running through a phase where they learn how to be emotional, at least on paper. All of this comes down to a big mess. You don't want to be parents too soon. You don't want to get your heart broken too fast. You need to understand what you're doing. Get yourself straight first before you put this craziness in there. If we start telling them that now, maybe you will desensationalize is what I meant to say,
right.
the aspect of sex. And then they
right.
won't feel like they need to rush to it right now because they got to prove something.
Now, I did a video on the media and sexual obsession, because I think we are obsessed with the idea of sex, and we're we're obsessed with what we think is or should be acceptable and all these things here. Because I mean, think about it. Like, you have people, and I'm not telling people how to have sex, but what I am saying is, everything isn't for everybody. So everything you shouldn't try, and a lot of these things, you're going to put yourself in a position to contract HIV. Now, let me read this stat to you, too, because you were saying about, you know, since we're talking about our parents and our teens, right? And I read again for you. It say, among all African Americans diagnosed with HIV in 2014, an estimated 57% were gay or bisexual men, and of these gay and bisexual men, 39% were young men ages 13 to 24.
Absolutely. And I would not be surprised with that stat in that group at all. It is damn sad that our future generation is being, I'm not going to say corrupted, because I don't have the right, like I said, to, I don't have the right to judge anybody's preferences or lifestyle or whatever it is.
Right.
And I don't have the right to do that. I respect everybody as they are, okay? My thing is that even though it may be the controversy as to whether or not they're born that way, they become that way, it doesn't matter to me. My whole thing is, even if it was a genetic thing or whatever the case is, come on, the media is pushing that particular aspect of life, of a lifestyle, as if that's the norm. You understand? They're not even making fashions that are you know, what we know to be male and female or gender correct. They have teenagers now that are coming out more than ever claiming they're trying to break gender barriers. We're not really gay, but we're going to dress like we are, because you know what? It's to break gender barriers. We're trying to make a statement. Okay.
But my question for them is, what statement are you making?
Exactly. What statement are you making?
You know,
one second. Go ahead. I'm sorry, sir.
You know, it's because, and now, and my fear, like 2 years ago, I came across a story of this man. Let's say the man was 35, and he was a transsexual.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a 5-year-old son who was his boy princess.
Wow.
So, when that child hits 18, 19, that child gets to college, have you mm-hmm. talked to him about sex and safe sex? Because that's my biggest concern when it comes to, you know, anal sex, period. Not just men having sex with men. Anal sex, period. That's my biggest thing. Because, let's just be real, parents don't want to talk to their kids about anal sex.
No. But you know what, though, Joe? I understand that aspect. And I'm sorry. I just wanted to touch on when we spoke a little earlier about being upfront with your children. It's not about so much your discomfort. You got to get over your discomfort because the world has no discomfort in presenting and showing your children this way. There's a way for you. I think the trick here is to be open and straightforward about sex, but not to demonize it either. You can't, you know, I had to go through that. I have 9-year-old twins who has a 14-year-old brother and an 18-year-old brother, okay? Both of which have gone through the curiosity of pornography or whatever the case is, okay? And they've watched things on TV or they speak about things on TV or whatever the case is. And I remember that our first reaction was to either don't say things like that. You know what? That's nasty or that's fresh. And it's not. That's what their bodies are going through. You have to explain to them, okay, sweetheart, I know what you're feeling, but this is you don't use that to anyone else. You don't touch anyone else at their age. However, as they start to feel and wonder what's going on, okay, you have to explain it to them and explain. It's a natural thing to feel. It's a wonderful thing when you're ready for it, but it should be done with respect. It should be done with somebody that you care about. There is a lot involved with it. It's more than just, believe me, honey, that physical feeling is going to be great. Now, I've been a single mom to more boys than girls for quite some time. So it's kind of hard for me to have to talk to my sons about it. But you know what? I had to chalk it up, get past the heartburn, the Pepsi, they see all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And my 14-year-old came to me and asked me about a wet dream he had. Okay?
Right.
And he knew it wasn't pee. You understand what I'm saying? And I had to explain to him, nothing to be ashamed of at all. It happens. It's part biology and it's part growing up.
Right.
You know, so we have, nowadays too, especially parents, we have got to be one step ahead of society. Because if we let our children go out and let society teach them first, it's going to be hell to pay.
Exactly. And see, that's my thing. But see, that's what leads to these stats being what they are. Young guy, young gay guy, nobody ever taught him about sex. Nobody ever talked to him about anal sex because mama too ashamed to talk about sex, especially anal sex or her son having sex with another man. Because mama cool with it, but mama really ain't accepted it all the way. Son goes off to college, son meets older guy. Older guy is a predator. Older guy, HIV positive, but older guy also got his own house, his own car, he got a job, he got access to money, food, all the things a young struggling college student don't have, especially a freshman. Older guy gets younger guy to his house, he woos him, wines him, dines him, has anal sex with him. Younger guy don't even really realize that, oh, this is a part of being homosexual, he has anal sex with him. All he know is it hurt, it's blood everywhere, next thing you know, he's around his school one day. He just go get tested because, hey, they giving out free tests, and his friend want to get tested. So he just got tested with his friend to make his friend feel comfortable getting tested. And guess who comes up positive?
Absolutely. But,
you know, and that's a common story because nobody want to talk about it. Ain't nobody really not talking about it with their daughters. Now let's talk about that. Not with their daughters.
You're absolutely right, and you know we've spoken again about how society makes men suppress anything. So here we go again. Most of the time they have to suppress their gay. Other times they can't say that they're victims. Talking about something of that personal nature, they can't even say it to the HIV counselor, let alone to anybody it's going to work with. Mothers are too busy trying to make our sons be strong in the wrong type of ways, and fathers, if they're there, are too busy patting their sons in the back for trying to score. So one of the things that we have got to do is bring the serious nature into a very natural thing, but to let them understand, if you do this the wrong way, some very grave and intense and severe things will happen.
Right. And you have to explain that to people when it comes to sex. Like, the three most effective sexual acts you can do to transmit HIV is first anal sex, then vaginal sex, then oral sex. But the only one that we get talked about is vaginal sex. That's the only one people, nobody talking about anal sex, nobody talking about oral sex, especially with their daughters.
And you know what's sad? If you're not talking about oral sex, you are missing 75% of the method that brings our children to this mess. Because a lot of kids that are trying to go the route of keeping themselves a virgin or whatever till marriage, they don't think that oral sex is sex.
Right. Yeah. Kids, parents, kids, everybody listen. If somebody penetrates your anus or your mouth, you are not a virgin anymore. And anal sex is the riskiest form of sex you can have. If you are trying to hide the fact that you are having sex from your parents, anal sex is not the sex you're supposed to have. And especially if you have an unprotected anal sex. All it takes is for someone, because if the anal lining is tore and somebody ejaculates inside that anal lining, because HIV has to get inside your bloodstream. And if it gets inside your bloodstream, then that's transmission. Now, check this out, Katie. So, you know, they got what they call that window period, because, you know, it takes HIV antibodies 3 months to show up in your system, right?
Right.
So, guy meets girl, guy has sex with girl, girl has trepidation about having unprotected sex with guy, girl go gets tested within 2 weeks, girl's test come back negative, because guess what? It hasn't been 3 months for the HIV antibodies to show up, but the HIV virus itself is in the body, and within a month or month and a half, the HIV antigens are going to form, and the antigens are the proteins that stimulate the production of antibodies. And most HIV tests are antibody tests, so if no antibodies are produced, they won't show up on the test. So that's that window period that they call that 3 month period. So guess what? She thinks she's safe, and let's say she has a boyfriend. So she get tested. The boyfriend's idea is, if my girl's straight, I'm straight. So she take the test. It say she's straight. She thinks she good. But guess what? She go home. She have unprotected sex with boyfriend. Something, whatever happens, where a port of entry is created within the boyfriend, vaginal fluids get in him, that's transmission, and now they're both positive, and now they're looking at each other like, you got me positive because you've been cheating. Now we got an issue.
Wow, and you're absolutely right. And the other thing a lot of people don't understand is that oral sex is also a method of transmission.
Right.
An infected person can infect you with oral sex. You know, cunnilingus, oral unprotected, you know, going down and doing all this other stuff. You guys are not understanding if you don't tell your children this. If you don't, maybe, you know what, call it scaring the hell out of them. But if you don't tell them everything they're up against, you're sending them out into a war with a half-cocked artillery. And I don't know what's more important than that.
I mean, I don't get it. I really don't get it. It goddamn pissed me off. Because think about it. You teach your child how to walk so they can walk, because you want them to know how to walk. You teach your child how to talk because it's important. You teach them how to read, teach them how to do all these things. You even teach your child how to drive a car. Because if you put your child in the car and they don't know how to drive, they're going to hurt themselves. But you can't understand that if you send your child out in the world and don't teach them about self, that they can hurt themselves. Come on, people. We got to do better. We have to do better.
You can't pick and choose the information you want to give your children when it comes down to these things. Like
right.
I said, we used to have the added benefit of the law protecting our children and the innocence of our children to a certain point. That's no longer the case. The federal regulations and FCC and airwaves and all that stuff, they don't stop TV from running anymore at 3 o'clock in the morning. They don't regulate what kind of shows can be seen at certain hours of the day. They don't regulate the content anymore. Exactly. They don't have clinics telling you that they can't perform certain things because you're underage without parental consent. They're not telling you that you can't decide to have an abortion or to get birth control without your parents there. No longer is that happening. What they are saying is, come on, have fun, join us, have a party, no problem, but Make sure you don't get a faulty contraception method. Make sure you guys are not loaded down with something you don't want to bring home. Make sure you don't get pregnant, and make sure that if you do get an abortion, that it's a real clean one, because if you have any type of medical kickbacks or any kind of defects with this method, we can't treat you without your parents knowing.
Right. Now, I know, I'm not sure how it is in New York, but I do know here in Florida that kids can get tested without parental consent. And they can get tested without parental consent.
Across the board. Across the board. It is. Okay. It's terrible.
Now, that's a good and bad thing. It's a good thing for kids who got crazy parents, but it's a bad thing for sneaky kids who have caring parents who they actually need to talk to their parents about. And see, that's why I'm so adamant about, if you are a parent, you need to have open dialogue with your child so you can talk about these things. Because if you're not talking about these things, it's a increase chance that your child may come across somebody who has malicious intent and infect your child with HIV.
Absolutely. And at the end of the day, I mean, look, I'm still one of those parents that say, to hell what the government says. The government did not give birth to you. The government doesn't even know you by name. You know, at the end of the day, unless there's something we have to log in, apply for, need help with, or whatever, the government won't know who you are.
Right. Right.
So I'm the one that's got to take care of you. At the end of the day, I'm the one taking care of you. If, you know, like I said, they're giving licenses to underage children, full-fledged adult licenses to kids that are 17 who will take an extra 3 hours or 4 hours of driving at driver's ed. And they feel they're qualified. These children are going out there inexperienced with a hot rod mentality, you know, figuring that they can tweak the laws here and there and risk themselves into accidents. You're talking about highly accessible, easily accessible, all forms of sex. They're not even treating rape or anything like that with a problem. Statutory rape is not even up as much as it should be.
Man, look at here. Look at here. No, but I'm agreeing with you, because like everything you're saying, I've seen with my own eyes with these teens, and I've seen it too many times with young black teens. There's no way you 16 and your mother is cool with you having sex with a 24-year-old.
Absolutely.
Matter of fact, I met this one young lady who, she was 14. And her mother was mad that she did not want a prostitute to bring money into the house. So she basically just saying, I want to set you up for failure. That's basically what she's saying to her daughter. I want to set you up for failure. I want you to be the same as I am. I don't want you to be better than me. I want to keep you down here where I am because I'm lonely. And that's an issue. But that also leads to low self-esteem in that young girl. And all the dude who is positive, who's walking around looking for an easy come up, she's an easy come up. And then you want to know what else I learned? That most of the time people are not just walking around with HIV only. They have other infections. They may have syphilis. They may have gonorrhea. They may have chlamydia. They may have herpes. They're often found in conjunction with HIV.
You know what's funny, and some of those things you're mentioning, it seems like out of all of them, HIV is least damaging. Because there's some things that no matter what, you don't get rid of them. I forgot which one it is, but you get antibodies. It may not be, look, herpes can come or go, but it's in you. Hepatitis B is in you.
Yep. That's something nobody ever talk about, hepatitis.
Hepatitis B is awful. Okay,
right.
Because everybody used to associate it with people who drink. It's not, hepatitis C might be that. Hepatitis B is sexually transmitted.
Yep. Anal play, specifically.
Well, say that one more time.
You know, through anally, it's transmitted, sexually, but more specifically through anal activities.
Exactly. Exactly. And a lot of them thinking, like, you know, sometimes just rubbing up and not even penetration. If the person is infected, if they have a little pre-ejaculate on them, that is going to transfer. And this is the thing, you know, a lot of these kids don't understand that even when you're just playing sneaky foreplay or things to that effect, that is a risk that you're taking. Yep. And if we parents aren't there to tell them that, or we as a village aren't there to tell these kids that, they're going to keep getting in there thinking, well, I didn't actually go all the way. I mean, I know
you
they don't see that anymore, but.
Right. No, you see, now, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, you really don't have to do that. You don't have to go all the way to be at the same amount of risk.
Right. And see, now we're talking about the dangers of STDs in this casual contact stuff, because like you're saying, you don't have to go all the way to be exposed to something. And a lot of people don't understand chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis can kill you quicker than HIV can. It literally can. Hepatitis is probably the worst out of the group, but it's the one nobody talks about.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, and now like you're saying, we're in the times where sexuality and the things that people do, like it seems, and I don't mean to insult people, but it almost seems like somebody's making up something new to do every day. It almost seems as that. You know, you can't, just because you might see somebody doing something on the flick, that don't mean you can do that. Everybody, like, it's this young man I came across. I was talking to him about sex and HIV and all these things. You know, we was in the closed area, and the young man was musty as hell. He was a 14-year-old, and he was musty as hell. And
wow.
So the first thing come to my mind is, boy, bro, you don't even understand how important hygiene is. And
yeah,
you're having sex.
Exactly. You musty as hell, but you know how to drop your pants or drop somebody else's.
Right. And but on the other hand, too, somebody actually doing you.
Exactly. And bad hygiene can transport some of the stuff, too.
Yes.
You dirty down there.
Bacterial infections.
Oh, my God. The nursing, pelvic inflammatory disease in women. Do you understand?
Right.
A lot of times, guys don't know that they're infected as quickly as a woman does because of the way he's built. But when it happens to them, it happens hard. You know?
Yeah.
But women get these things. Women get, we're so quick, much more quickly to be infected because of, we're receptacles pretty much.
Right, exactly.
And that's something that women need, with that goal, need to be informed of by everybody in their life. Everybody. And now with our young men becoming effeminized and going that route, and a lot of these guys, some of them, I'm hearing, not even gay, but you know what? Anal sex is a thing.
Yeah.
You know
what
I'm saying? So they're even trying it. So now they're becoming receptacles. So everybody is doing something.
Yeah, and like I said earlier, you can't do what everybody else does. And you know what I learned? When it comes to anal sex, there is a long, well, I ain't going to say long, drawn-out process, but there's a process that you have to go to prepare your body to receive, to even engage in anal sex. And we talk about from a safety point, right? You have to understand how you have to clean yourself. You have to understand how you have to train your anus to receive. You can't just say, hey, I want to have anal sex and just have anal sex. You have to go through a process. Your anus was not designed to be penetrated. So you have to take your time. You got to start with small things and get up to like a penis or whatever to be able to have anal, because sex should not hurt. I don't care how I was going, sex should not hurt. And if it's hurt, somebody's doing it wrong. And you know, when somebody get through having anal sex with you, it shouldn't be no blood or nothing like that, and you shouldn't be in excruciating pain or anything like that. Now, and you have to understand that, because no, truth be told, the anus was not designed to be penetrated. But when all that is not done correctly, that leads to the transmission of not only HIV but other STDs that come along with it. And people have to understand that and take this serious.
Absolutely, and the tearing of that anal lining is like the biggest gateway to everything else, and that's what people don't get. And you see all these girls, and alcohol is becoming at a higher consumption rate by younger kids, you know, which leads to lower inhibitions and things to that effect. So all of this is happening on a massive scale to our younger generation.
Right. So I mean, it's things that we have to take serious. It's things that we have to stop overlooking. We cannot keep sweeping things under the rug. Now, I understand that across the board, everybody, you know, education level does matter. You know, self-esteem, all these things do matter because, you know, where I am, I'm in the middle. Like, I live in the city part of this area, of like the 8-county area. We're in the big city. But outside of this city, everybody don't have the same opportunities. Everybody don't have access to the same information and resources that I have. So it's not going to be the same across the board. So that's why people like us have to get out of our communities, get into these other communities. Because if you say you love black people, no matter what somebody's sexual orientation is, no matter what, you know, religion somebody is, no matter all these things, if you love black people, at least get out there and try. Now, if somebody don't want to receive your information, that's one thing. But get out, I feel we can get out there and try to help educate other black people so we'll know what's going on, so because our future generations don't have to deal with these diseases if we do what we're supposed to do now.
Absolutely. And I think you and I spoke before about this false awareness crap that comes out from the government. We don't need to... Yeah, we don't need to be more aware that there's a problem. We need to be informed and supplied with a solution. This is the problem. We can't be a solution if you're part of the problem. Government needs to stay the hell out of parents' way. The teachers need to be more involved. And all this chain of capital command that's happening over and over, that's removing the actual value of the community because everybody's out for a dollar. The children are suffering. You know, the children are suffering. You got schools now that are giving your children access to condoms. They're making them enticing by putting them in different colors and fun designs and all this other stuff. But they're saying they're promoting safe sex. Why promote sex at all?
Right.
There's enough aspect of sex all over the place as it is. Why are you promoting any type of sex? Why not inform the children how sex goes and let the parents have their rightful shot at whatever.
Right.
You can't stop what the kids do, what your kids are going to encounter in the street. But we do have the right to be able to put some sort of barrier in their head. Okay,
right.
So that they can understand that there's a line you can't cross right now.
That's true. I mean, it's very, 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 very imperative that we change our narrative, we change our story, we get over the stigma, we stop living in ignorance, especially if you have access to information and resources. Stop living in ignorance. Stop being the person who know more about sex and being safe than anybody else. No, I don't care how long you studied HIV. I don't care how many PhDs, whatever you got. You can always learn something new. And these are the things that we have to do moving forward so we can, you know, help these next generations understand that they can have healthy generations. You know, their generation can be healthy and the ones after them. So, Kate, I ain't gonna keep you on the line all night because we got to kind of wrap this up in a bit. But you got any parting shots, any final thoughts that you want to give about HIV/AIDS and the black community's health, or just, you know, the black community as a whole?
Yes, I want to tell the black community that, you know, that the outsiders are not going to look out for us, so we have to do that. We have to take back being afraid to speak about things that, you know, our parents used to teach us was a little taboo. Taboo is over with this society. Our children are not stupid. Technology is telling them things that we've been trying to keep quiet for years. We no longer have our own deadline or timeline to work with anymore because society took away the parents' right to present something on their own base. So we have to step up. HIV/AIDS is a very serious and prejudice thing. It hits everybody everywhere. So please step up and please take your fear out of your equation and be strong for your kids. And Joe, I'm proud of you all the time. I thank you for the advocacy and stuff that you put out there and the actual solutions that you give in your part of the world. So I appreciate that. And thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, no, I appreciate you. everything that you do. I appreciate your kind words, your energy, your passion, everything that you bring to the table as an activist yourself, because you do a lot. And despite your challenges, you always rise. And I think, you know, you are somebody that people can look at and see what true strength is, because no matter what your challenges is, you always overcome your challenge and you get back to what you're doing. So my hat goes off to you.
Thank you, son. I will be talking to you soon, okay? Have
yes,
a good
ma'am.
One.
Yes, ma'am. Right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
All right, people, it is now, before we wrap this up, let me go through our community calendar. So, NSBE 42nd Annual Convention, Engineering a Cultural Change. It's in Boston, Massachusetts, March 23rd through the 27th, 2016. So please join us. Please join them as they prepare to gather in Boston, Massachusetts for NSBE's 42nd Annual Convention next March. It's March 23rd through 27th. As members of the National Society of Black Engineers, they pride themselves on their academic accomplishments and their efforts to increase the number of black engineers. The goal of the convention planning meeting this year is to support the vital work by presenting an event that will invigorate your spirits and energize your minds. They want to prepare you to compete. Yeah, to complete your STEM education, make a cultural impact in the communities, and gain the knowledge and skills to succeed professionally. This year's annual convention will forever impact society as they enter an era of change and growth. They challenge you to be a part of this change and spread the NSBE love to your families, friends, and communities. It's up to all of us to help NSBE realize the words of its mission statement. Please join them as they ignite Boston and keep the NSBE torch burning in their schools, in the workplace, and in the community. And it will be at the Austin Urban Music Fest. Like I said, March 23rd through the 27th in Boston, Massachusetts. So make sure you, if you're in the Boston area, you better check it out. Young Black Engineers. All right, so now we have the Austin Urban Music Festival. That will be Friday, April 1st, 2016 at 3 p.m. It will feature Drew Hill. It starts April 1st. That Friday, they will feature Drew Hill. That Saturday will be Frankie Beverly featuring Maze, or Maze freaking featuring Frankie Beverly, however you want to, before I let you go. You know what I'm saying? It's at the Town Lake Auditorium Shores in Austin, Texas. So make sure if you're in the Austin, Texas area. Now, if you're in Tallahassee, Florida, the My Life Tallahassee experience is happening again. My Life Tallahassee is a fun and inspiring group of youth between the ages of 13 and 23 who have experience with mental health, substance use, foster care, and other challenges. My Life's monthly events feature inspirational speakers, uplifting entertainment, fun activities, free food and information, and on a variety of topics and important to you. A variety of topics that are important to the youth. So the next one will be tomorrow, Wednesday, March 23rd, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Palmer Monroe Teen Center, which is located at 1900 Jackson Bluff Road in Tallahassee, Florida. So make sure you be there or you be square. For more information, you can contact 602-692-9135. Yep, and you know how we get down on the Freedom Train, man. We give you a little bit of this, we give you a little bit of that, then we bust in the brain with this, then we come back jabbing with that. You know, we got to keep it going. Shout out to Miss Katie Barnett for taking the ride on the Freedom Train. You too, Katie. You too, get you a little VIP section to yourself on the train. You know, we're always giving out VIP sections to our honored guests, and you get the round of applause. Yeah, shout out to Katie Barnett. One time for my man Pat, he couldn't make it today, but you know, man, it ain't the same without you, but we got to hold it down and do our thing. Fitz, thank you. Thank you for holding it down with us when you can, and you know, we do what we can. So, I'm Joseph Ward, and thank you for tuning in to the Freedom Train, your community resource podcast series. Our mission is to connect professionals, business owners, and resources to our community members to uplift and empower our communities. Remember, We're on air every third and fourth Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. Now, we got 5 Tuesdays in this month, so we will be back next Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we are interviewing author Akua Egusi. So make sure you don't miss that show, because if you miss it, hey, man, I told you not to miss it. I told you. Remember, the call-in number is 712-775-7031. The access code is 619-364-257. So visit our website, www.freedomtrainradio.com. Once again, visit our website, www.freedomtrainradio.com. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at _freedomtrain. Make sure you go buy a copy of my book, On the Shoulders of Giants, Volume 1, North America. It's available at Amazon.com. It's available in Kindle, on the Kindle. It's available in audiobook at audible.com. It's available at barnesandnoble.com. It's available at lulu.com. It's available at ejunkie.com. There's no excuse for you not to have a copy of my book. We got so many formats: ebook, the audio book, the print book. You know, we got a PDF copy, and I even got my interactive PDF workbook that is designed to help increase literacy, help increase reading, help increase sentence structure, critical thinking, all these things. And it's a great thing that can be used in schools on the smart boards. You can use it on your phone, on your tablet. The whole family can get together and read the book and go through the workbook. You can do it in the schoolyard, I mean in the schools and all that things there, man. It's designed to help increase the knowledge of our African heroes and our ancestors, and help you become a better overall academically. I've always felt it was a handicap for oppressed peoples to depend so largely upon a leader, because unfortunately in our culture, the charismatic leader usually becomes a leader because he has found a spot in the public limelight. And that's a quote by Ella Baker. Remember, next Tuesday we will be right back here, and we are interviewing author Akua Egusi at 6:30 p.m. Tune in. Love yourself unconditionally. And until then, you know how we do. Two fingers in the air like a player. Peace out.